is and all that.
Okay.
And then I'll have to make sure that the volume's okay.
Okay. This is Nancy Olson of the Washington County Historical Society. Assisting me is Louise Wilson, president of Tualatin Valley Heritage. This is Wednesday, March 4th, 1981, and we are interviewing Guy Carr at his office in Carr Chevrolet at 11635 Northwest Canyon Road in Beaverton, Oregon. Let me just see if I...
Really, just listening. You don't need to put me
on
there at all.
Well, I think you might be able to interject on occasion, Louise. Would you state your full name?
Guy Crockett Carr.
Guy Crockett Carr. And your date and place of birth?
Telluride, Colorado, 1900.
How long have you been a resident of Beaverton?
Since 1918 and a half.
1918 and a half.
After World War One. Yeah.
How did you get the middle name Crockett?
That's a good question. I came from the Deep South, and I think everybody's some relation to Davy Crockett. I'm from Virginia.
I see. All right. So you've been in Beaverton since 18?
Yeah, well, about 6 months after the war was over.
End of the war. What caused you to come to Beaverton?
Well, my folks separated when I was 4 years old. And they took me back to the old plantation in Virginia. My grandparents raised me. Hmm. And that plantation is in Fairfax County, out of Washington, D.C. The Dulles Airport is located on 650 acres of our old plantation now. And I came, during the service I found out where my mother lived. And so I wanted to see her. I had 4 years old. And I thought, well, okay, I'll look her up. And I came out here after I got out of the service. And found out that she lived in Beaverton, Oregon.
Yes, she did.
So that's what brought me to Beaverton. And luckily, I used to work for Parkway Motor Car Company before I went in the service in Washington, D.C. That was a Ford garage. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I got out here, my stepdad and my mother had the Ford dealership here, Hillsboro and Forest Grove.
What was the name of it?
It was Auto Erickson Company.
What?
Otto Erickson and Company.
Otto Erickson and Company.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you showed up in Beaverton.
Yeah, after the armistice signed, about 6 months or something like that.
6 months after that. Yeah. What did Beaverton look like at that
time? Well, it was just a wood yard for Portland. At that time, on both sides of the Southern Pacific track from Beaverton to St. Mary's, was cordwood piled up on both sides of the track. Portland, that's the only way he heated the city of Portland was with wood those days. And it all came from this area, Cripple Mountain and all through. This is all big timber, all through here, virgin timber.
All right, were there farms?
All farms, hewed out in different spots all through the county, yeah. And I sold tractors, Ford's tractors in the early days, all through here to the farmers.
So there were farms in the area.
There's farms, and they were clearing land and all over, and the Downings over here in Greenway. The Downings and the McGowans and all of they were busy clearing that ground then when I came here.
Were the Pianovas here at that time, or the Bee Gees?
Bee Gees, oh yeah.
Were here.
Yeah, Louie was here. Yeah, I remember Louie real well.
What did they raise?
Well, they had the gardens down in that river, so they had kale and, well, anything could go to the market, anything, the Amhill market.
This was Beaver Dam.
Oh, this is all Beaver Dam off that through here.
It's flat. When I look out your window, I see it's very flat. Today, of course, it's greatly different from what you thought.
Oh, yeah, we used to dam it up, and we had lakes, and they flood that every winter, and they raised celery. My memory.
Horseradish.
No.
I know celery was raised.
The Frenchman over here, just on the end of my tongue, but he raised onions. There was a lot of onions raised here. And asparagus.
Oh, asparagus, all right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's very.
And then there's Joricelli and. Oh gosh, I can't loosen them all. They had every morning they go to the market for their stuff.
Yamhill, Portland.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Up over Canyon.
Well, sometimes or go Trilogy Boulevard. Trilogy Boulevard was a better route. We had Corduroy Road down the Canyon Road then.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Can you tell me anything about Bernard Airport?
Yeah. I'm guilty for put it in.
You are?
I help. I and Archie Olson I think of these old guys' names.
Well, who was Bernard?
Huh?
Who was Bernard?
Charlie Bernard,
Charlie?
He owns the thing. And, but we put the first one on Erickson Avenue. We used to have a movie studio there on Erickson.
The first airport was on Erickson?
Mm hmm. Yeah, I and Archie I could shoot myself and come up with a name. Gosh, we built airplanes together. I'll come up with it.
All right.
And
How many acres
what?
The old airport on Erickson Avenue.
Oh, I don't know. About 10 of it was ours, and then the old studio that joined there, there must have been, I'm going to say another 10. I'm just guessing. That's the acreage.
When was it moved up here?
About 1932. Mm-hmm.
You build airplanes?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that.
Well, George Yates, now the name comes back.
George what?
George Yates.
Yates?
Yeah.
So you and Charlie Bernard and Archie Olson and George Yates.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about building airplanes.
Well, we got into that during the Depression and built quite a few of them. By Nonetica, bought pictures down.
You have pictures?
Hmm?
You do have pictures?
Oh, no, I don't.
Oh, excellent.
They had a over here at the theater about the night of that crash of the United out at there, that they put on a party for us, and in the early days somebody had a movie camera. I didn't even have a camera. Yeah, of us over there flying and building these planes.
And so you had this.
And there was only 12 of them, 12 pilots. And out of the 12 that was able to become, you know, back then, there was only three of us could walk in on our own fire.
Why is that?
Well, it was all crippled up and everything.
All right.
And there's not that many living.
Okay, out of the 12.
Yeah. And Charlie Bernard, he had cataracts so bad. And I went up and shook hands with him, and he said, well, I can't see, but I know it's Guy Carver's voice. And Dwight Smith was there, and he bombed the OX-5 Club. That's a World War I airplane.
OX-5?
Mm-hmm.
Which, I'm sorry, what was that?
OX-5. That's the name of the plane.
All right.
That they boys, Rickenbacker and all of them, fought World War I.
Mm-hmm.
And he bombed. He was a pilot there. So was George Yates.
Is that right? Where'd you get your interest in airplanes?
Well, through George. He lived just across the street from me here in town. And we built a glider first. And then we went from that into airplanes.
How many would you say you've built?
Oh, maybe 15, 20.
You're telling the truth now.
No, I don't tell the truth. I told you the biggest liar in town.
That's intriguing to me that an airport. Was the Hillsborough Airport built?
Oh, no.
Was that much later?
It wasn't anything up there.
So who used the airport?
Well, all of us. Bush pilots, that was all. We called ourselves bush pilots. We sit out in the fields out here once in a while. And just went from place to place and barnstormed to, you know, take people up the ride and this, that, and that.
Who taught you to fly?
I don't know.
Probably just picked it up?
Yeah. Oh, well, there wasn't no teaching. You just crawled in and flew it.
Now, would planes from how far away would planes?
How far?
From how far away would planes come and land at the Beaverton
Airport? Oh, they came from Yakima down here and the Dalles, and then we had the mail out of the Dalles to. Let's see, that was the Dalles. Now, let me take on that one. Where did it? Oh, Boise. And those boys, every once in a while, would come in here. Tex Rickard came in here from Portland. Swan Island. They had on Swan Island, they had airport down there.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd go down there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What happened to all those old planes?
Well, that's a good question. One of them got destroyed over here in the Columbus storm at Pearson's airport. Remember that?
It was destroyed?
Yeah.
I noticed there's an old propeller up at Bernard Beaverton Mall. Is that off of one of the old planes?
Well, it probably was.
Probably.
Yeah, it's in the mall there, right?
Yes, it's hanging up on the wall.
Harold Langdon has one of them, but he and his bus, he got in his house.
Is it wooden?
Huh?
Is it wooden, the it propeller?
Wooden box, yeah. Uh-huh. That's all we had.
That's all you had. All right.
Put it out of a stick of wood.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Now, what about the Oregon Electric Railway?
Oregon Electric? Well, it was here when I came here. And the Southern Pacific had more trains than the Oregon Electric. An uncle of mine was engineer on the Oregon Electric and married to an aunt of mine. And we had Red Electric every hour from Forest Grove to Portland, every hour. And that was the main travel those days. That's the way we got places.
It's on this track right over here.
Well, the Southern Pacific.
All right. Mm-hmm. Where was the station?
Right where the U.S. Bank is.
All right. Did you take the train occasionally?
Oh,
to Portland or Forest Grove?
Yeah. Oh, we all horse and buggy or any way you could, or foot sometimes.
Did you walk into Portland?
Oh, yeah. Down Canyon Road.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about the Multnomah Golf Club?
Well, that was started in the 20s. And I think I sold the manager a Star car. I quit Ford in 1925. I'm getting ahead of my story. I bought my stepdad out here in the Bearden in 1923, and he had the Hillsborough. And then August Anderson had the Forest Grove dealership. And I bought this out and rented the building from him. And then my garage burnt down in 1930. And so then I had to move up the law just for a short time. And then I came back to Beaverton during the Depression.
All right. Now back onto the Multnomah Golf Club.
All right, Multnomah?
Yes.
That was in the 20s. I'm just trying to think, because I took on the dealership in 25 with Star, quit Ford, and took on Star.
You're right, it was 1924.
Huh?
It was 1924.
Oh, was it 24? Well, I was in there some, because I sold the manager a 25 car. And going down that long drag to the clubhouse, now it's a school over there.
Not anymore, but I believe it turned into Gable School.
That's right. That's the old clubhouse.
Right. The clubhouse has been torn down the last
years. Well, okay. Then, but that's the location.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he turned the car upside down, he and his wife, and nobody got hurt, but the old car was pretty well taken care of.
Did you play golf over there?
No, I never did play golf.
You too busy building airplanes?
Yeah, well, I've long before golf, but I never played golf.
Uh-huh. Do you know people who used the Multnomah Golf Club?
Oh, some of the old timers, there's none of them around here that I know. No, I can't place my finger on that. See, I'm old enough now, if I turn in my chips tomorrow morning, there's no old timers to call me off the cemetery.
You've outlived them all?
I've outlived them.
Is Merle Davis still not around?
Yeah, she's still here, yeah. And she must be about 90. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say that she's about 90.
She must be. I interviewed her 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
You started to bring up the history of Car Chevrolet.
Well, Car Chevrolet, now listen, I quit Ford. I had Ford all
the You bought it from your stepfather?
Yeah, I bought the deal and rented the building from him, see.
All right.
And then
Excuse me, where was the location of, of?
Well, it was up there on Farmington Road. The old building, my shed, that World War One surplus building, was connected to the garage, but the front of it, the garage burned down.
Okay.
In 1930. And so we moved that up. We owned that whole block, and I, and my house set right on 2nd and Main.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So then after the Ford agency, what happened?
Well, I had to start. And then what happened then, they went broke during the Depression, and I went broke with them.
Okay. And then how did you survive?
Well, that's a good question. We, any old way we could. We had no money, the banks closed, and keep a business running. We had that contract with the school those days for the furnish the buses. They had 5 buses. And they paid us off in warrants. And the drivers, I had to meet the payroll, and no money. And nobody had any money, period. There was just no money. And so I was fortunate enough, the Downings out there that I was telling you about, they didn't believe in banks. And they had kept it in a tin can under a stump out there where they're making this farm, you know, cutting down big trees and taking stumps out. Oh, they were hard workers. Well, the bachelor, Jim, he financed me to where he could. And he'd take my warrants. They paid 8% interest. And that way I got my hand on a little money to meet the payroll for the drivers. And then as I kept, I was on the city council at that time. And they paid off the warrants. The school paid off the warrants. The county was on warrants. Nobody had any money. And so I found a lady in town. Well, she lived out here on the River Road, the name of Gotti. Gotti First Store. And they
really, what was her name again?
Gotti. Ed Gotti. Mr. and Mrs. Ed Gotti. And they had a big old Studebaker. When the Depression came on, I had to rely on just running my shop. I had no dealership from 30 to 35. Then I took on Nash. And then from Nash, I bought the Chevrolet out in 1940.
You bought car Chevrolet in 1940, or you, all right. You, so you had the Nash dealership for about 5 years?
5, 6 years, something like that. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, and then you, who had the Chevrolet dealership?
Stipe. Yeah, he started. Yeah, same time my folks started the Model T.
What was his first name?
Helmer Stipe.
So then, did you build this building?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
When?
1950.
In 1950?
Mm-hmm. I had the Nash dealership where Siebert's Furniture is. I owned that. I had the Nash in there, and then I bought the Chevrolet next door. And I had the 2 dealerships at one time.
So you've been in the automobile industry a long time.
Well, before World War One.
Right.
Every day, outside the service. Yeah. And I was a pilot in World War One.
You were?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you were a pilot in World War One.
Yeah. This you'll get a charge out of them. I was in Troop G-14th Cavalry. I piled horsemen there and mule, one pile to the other, and that made me a pilot out of it. Now you want to record that? You're crazy.
You piled it, huh?
Yeah.
Oh.
I made a pilot out of me.
I made a pilot out of you. Okay.
You want to know where I learned it? How to pilot it.
Yeah, I now know where you learned it. Okay, I'm fascinated with you being in the automobile industry, you know, since just after World War One.
Well, before World War.
Before World
War. Parkway Motor Car Company in Wisconsin. I was just back there 2 years ago. I didn't see
you visited back there? What were the prices of cars, prices of gas?
Well, I sold gas here in Beaverton during the Depression, 7.5 cents a gallon.
What was it in the 40s?
After the 40s, about 25.
Or let's say, after World War II, Duke.
Well, after World War II, I never got into the gas business. I didn't want any more of that.
Okay.
Only for my own use.
All right. Name some of the cars that... some of the more popular cars in the...
Well, the popular cars was Ford and Chevrolet and Star during the Depression, up to the Depression, and Star faded out. Well, the reason I took on Star was shellacking Model T Ford and Chevrolet right here in this county, and Shipley was the distributor in Portland. He was selling more Stars in here, and Stipe and I were selling Fords. And we got a notice from Ford Motor Company that we would be without merchandise from 26 to 27, the factory went down to make the Model A. Well, I was having a tough time to make ends meet with the, and the tractors at that time were keeping me alive more so than the And Star was shellacking me, so I took a look at that and quit Ford and took that on.
What about road conditions in Beaverton in general?
Road?
Mentioned the canyon was corduroy.
Corduroy, part of it, down at the lower end of the little dairy down there at the bottom, and had a watering trough there to water the horses and stuff. And then there was a section there, I'm going to say 500 yards over the low part there that they had corduroy. That's the way the wagons and horses and teams and automobiles had to make it.
And then when you got up, over and down?
Well, it was just gravel road, mud, gravel. Everything was gravel road that the county could gravel.
How'd you go to Hillsboro?
Go to Hillsboro? We went on the down through Farmington and at the Shaw Corner there, turned off and went right straight through to Reedville and stayed on the south side of the railroad up to Hazeldale, or Witch Hazel. Crossed the track there, and then the road went into Hillsboro.
How about Salem?
Salem? Well, we had a road down Salem. I never made that very often. Well, the old 99,
yes. W. Yes, okay. Yeah. How many mechanics did you have?
Well, during the 20s, I had about 5. I got pictures of that.
Up into the 40s now, when you've established Car Chevrolet.
Well, then I just nicely got started. See, I had the Nash in one building, and I had to take over and I remodeled. I spent about 6 months in remodeling the old building up there, where Herzog was. Now it's the Honda. And between the mechanics between the two, making the transition over, it was 41, about July of 41, I think it was, when I took over, or moved over into the Chevrolet place. But I kept the Nash one hand here, and this. So I only had about 4 or 5 mechanics.
About 4 or 5. How did the automobiles companies get to be put up on one end of Canyon Road?
I started that in 1950.
Tell me about that, would you?
Well, I just built down here, and everybody built it. I started it, and then I hear it went. Okay. Not much to tell you about them.
Okay.
I was the first one out here, outside the city limits.
This was outside the city limits. Mm-hmm. Where was the city limits?
The ditch.
I'm not familiar with the ditch.
Well, you cross it every day.
Do I?
That feeds us the Beaver Dam here.
Oh, all right. Sure. That was the city limit. Okay.
When I was on the city council.
And which we're going to get into government.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. The Depression, you already mentioned that was really hard to survive.
Well, that's worse now than it ever was then, as far as I'm concerned. I didn't lose money during a Depression. about help my own, but if we lose money, we haven't seen any, nothing but red figures now for 18 months.
So you would consider today's
situation
worse? Someone told me that you mentioned that you were paid in warrants.
Warrants, yeah.
Is that the same thing as script? I heard that the county...
Well, script. We had script. The county put out script, and so did the city. But that's just paper.
Mm-hmm.
As script, I took in wooden money from the Nanaimo, or Tenaimo, Washington. I wished I had it today. People come through, and they made their script out of wood.
Hmm.
And real thin little sheets and bought like that would be a dollar or 50 cents or whatnot. See.
I heard that the county, Washington County, paid their employees in script.
No, warrants.
In warrants. What's the difference?
Well, a warrant drew interest. The script was the face value.
All right. Okay. Now, World War II. When World War II happened, I assume that there was an automobile shortage?
Well, there was for 4 years, yeah. I just nicely got the 42 model Chevrolet. We just had our opening, and wham, December the 7th. That's it. And then he froze everything. I couldn't keep my men. They froze the wages. My place, and then paid more to ship car, and all my crew walked out, left me alone. Well, two, one, Mr. Wright, he stayed with me, and the two of us kept the two dealerships when during the war.
What did you sell at that time, the two of you?
We didn't have nothing to sell, only work on cars. And they froze what few cars we did have, and then I went out and bought cars from other dealers that wanted to get out and forget it, and stored them. I stored them in that Siebert's building there. And when an old PA came on, then they froze those and batteries and tires. And that interesting story, I'll tell you about the tires. I was a distributor for the U.S. and Gates Rubber Company at that time. Tires. I had about the only tire place in town then. And they froze the tires. The government did. I couldn't sell them. Do nothing. And then I had a friend, another friend that financed me too during the Depression. And he said, "Guy, in 1940, now this is his thinking in 1940, he says, you buy every tire you possibly can and store it." I said, "What with, Fred?" He said, "If you need some money, I'll let you have, I've got a little savings that I have, and you pay me the interest that I get at the bank." And that's 1940. He says, "You can have that." So he peeled out $5,000 for me. And I signed a note for it, subject to the change of conditions at the time with the tariff, you know. Well, I just nicely got them in the warehouse and up, and they froze them. There it was. I couldn't sell a tire, I couldn't pay old Fred, or anything. Well, he says wartime, and he told me why, I'm getting ahead of my story, why to get all the tires can. He says, "We're going to war with Japan, and the Philippines have cut off our rubber." And that's what happened.
And that's what happened.
In 1940, he told me this, see. Knowing what I know now, I wouldn't be here sitting here talking to you. I'd be down in the South Pacific someplace, enjoying the sun. But he knew.
Well, you had these tires.
Huh?
You had these tires.
Oh, sure. I had several $1,000 of my own. I had a big supply without moving in. Just $5,000 and $5,000, those people bought a lot of tires. And they're froze by the government. And then OPA came along. They froze batteries, they froze my cars. I couldn't sell a car. And I had those cars floored, and I had to pay the interest on them. And couldn't sell them.
This went on for how long?
Oh, I think OPA I don't have the record on, but I'm going to say that I was sitting there behind Guy for about 6 months before the OPA came along, as Office of Price Administration. And anybody qualified for a car, they'd bring a certificate over to me. If they wanted one of my cars, okay, then that's the way I saw it.
Gee, how'd all this end up then?
Huh?
How did all this end up?
What did it end up?
Well, the war ended.
War ended, yeah.
And then
the OPA was done out, and I was back on my own again. Where were you in World War I? You weren't even thought of.
I was 4 years old.
4 years old?
Yeah, it was.
I was 4 years old in the Civil War.
How about any community efforts during World War II? Were you involved in any fundraising or bond?
Oh, everything. And we had, I was on the city council at that time. And we WPA, did you ever hear tell of WPA? Well, to get people working and keep them eating with the WPA, we had projects in the city of building sidewalks. There's board sidewalks here then. There was no concrete.
Before World War II? Okay.
Before World War II. So anyway, we were building sidewalks with WPA. And that was it. And then we had community gardens. I had tractors in my dealership. And the Bill Grauer, an old timer here, he's passed on now, his widow's still alive. I just out last Friday and took her out to dinner tonight. And we got talking about how community gardens. I was on the city council, we had to take lots back if people couldn't pay the taxes or street assessment. And there was no blacktop, it was just gravel. And to get them back on the tax roll, we'd give them a lot if they'd build a $2,500 house on it. And I can name a bunch of houses around here that
were built that way.
$2,500. Mm. And that put them back on the tax. That was the only way we could get any money to run the city.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these lots, vacant lots, Bill, familiar with the tractor, came off the farm up at Sheridan, and he said, if you let me have a tractor and a plow, I'll plow these gardens, make gardens and community gardens. And everybody got into that and really raised enough food, more than really the people.
That thing flipped over. We were talking about community gardens.
Community gardens or victory gardens, whatever you wanted to call it, but people had to eat.
What was the name of the man who...
Bill Grauer. William Grauer.
Grauer.
Mm-hmm. he was in World War I.
Where were the gardens?
Oh, all over town, back up in here, just vacant lots, all over town, any direction you want to look.
Were there savings bond drives?
Oh yeah, I wasn't on the committee of the bond, sell war bonds, no. And I wasn't on that committee because I had my hands full with city council. And try to keep the business alive too. I worked 24 hours a day and 8 days a week, didn't I?
Did you? Well, you mentioned that you were on the city council. Can we talk about county government before we get into city government? Would that be all right?
Well, let's stick to city government.
All right, we're on city government, so.
Well, I go back to sidewalk. We were laying sidewalks for 20 cents a running foot during the Depression.
Cement?
Mm-hmm. 4 inches deep.
Wow. 20 cents?
20 cents.
$20 now.
Oh yeah, it's a bit of it.
At least.
Yeah. And then let's see, some other WPA project. I have to tell you about the well. Oh, that's a good story. Portland shut us off water because we couldn't pay our water bill. We brought in water from Raleigh Station, and the beer. And in those days, they had old wooden mains. That's the only thing they knew. And they were put in about 1910 or 11 and brought in the beer. And
would that have been Bull Run water, Guy?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It came up from where?
Well, from Raleigh.
Okay.
Raleigh Station. You
Raleigh
know where
Hills?
Raleigh Station is?
Raleigh Hills?
Well, Raleigh Station.
No.
Well, Raleigh Station's the other side of of Glen Cullen.
All right.
And there was the city line. The county line took over right there. And then we had the city, these pipes were in the beer, and well, they deteriorated to the point where we were losing more water than we were selling.
Mm-hmm.
And I was chairman of the water committee.
What year was this?
Doggone, you let me.
Is it before World War II?
Right during it. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was during the Depression. And so when they did that, of course, we notified everybody to fill their bathtub full of water, you know, cooking and whatnot, and drinking water.
Yeah.
That way, and they had to turn their water on 1 hour a day. And well, they didn't have to. I'm getting ahead of the story. I'm sorry. They, someone, not me, I wasn't smart enough to think of, got the health, state health at the end of the thing. And they had to turn that water on 1 hour a day for flushing toilets and water use, one hour a day. And we owed them $75,000 in back pay.
The city of Beaverton?
Mm-hmm. Owed Portland. So anyway, I sold Jim, Al Jensen a new car, and that was, I'm going to say.
Is that Jensen the well driller?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
A new car, and we went fishing, and he knew our plight, and well drilling was down, everything was down, there's nothing to do. And so he said, what are you going to do about the water? And I said, well, we can't do anything any different than what we're doing. He said, I'll tell you what, I'll make you a deal. If you'll pay Charlie Anderson his salary, the well driller, and I'll furnish the rig, if you'll just pay for the breakdown of the rig during, and up here we had a reservoir up on Vista Hills, up above Nandell's there. And I said, well, okay, Al. I said, that's pretty good of you to do that. And Charlie, I forget what we paid him a day, about $5 a day for drilling. And we had to pay him that and pay for the rig, upkeep or anything. Well, the city didn't have any money in the general fund because we was broke. That's all there was to do. So the five councilmen went to the bank. O.J. Gibson came here then, and we borrowed from him, was signed a note for $2,500, five of them, to start that
finance.
And we had to have 450 gallons of water a day in order to take care of the city at that time. And we had the reservoir, but nobody knows where the water is.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he said, you'll have to furnish a tractor to help get the rig up, boy, straight up from Nandell. There's an old log road up there, wood road. So I had a big old 1530 McCormick Deering, and we take it down there and hooked onto the well drilling machine, and we got it up there.
You had a 15-year-old what, Guy?
1530, that's a model international, McCormick Deering, tractor.
Tractor, McCormick.
I was selling tractors.
Yes, right. McCormick Deering?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Made by International.
All right, go ahead.
So we got the rig up there, and Charlie started drilling. Well, as you go down, solid rock, after you got down about 10 feet, you get into solid rock. And we kept going and couldn't find enough water. And we got down about, 430 feet. And we didn't have enough water for the town, so he lost the tools in the hole. Well, we thought it was done, and here we'd signed a note for $2,500, and that was a lot of money for us guys. But we were all broke. was too. So Charlie says, I'll get those tools out of it. It takes me the rest of my life. And he says, you won't have to pay me for the time getting them out. So he fished for 2 weeks and finally got a hold of them. Got them out. And when he started out, you know, when he had the dynamite, put dynamite down in around the tools to loosen up the tools where he could help get a hold of them. And then had to start out again. We got the hole with the dog leg in, the crooked. And kept on going, got down to 735 feet, and we found 450 gallons of water up in it. Well, okay, we had a test pump to see how much the well static came out, how far the water came up, what the drop was. We had enough water, but we had no money to buy a pump. Well, now I'm getting back to the year. There's 32. 33. Now I'll tell you why. I remember that. So a friend who used to live here in Bearden, Mike Weller, the Weller family, and they're an old timer, and he was manager of the Bingham Pump at that time, and he knew what a plant was. So he said, "Guy, if you'll furnish me a flatbed truck over the weekend, I'll get you a pump and a motor, but I won't have any shaft. I can't furnish the shaft." They were building Bonneville Dam at that time, and the Crawford Dams. They bought pumps off of Bingham, and when they got through it, they just threw them up on the bank.
Oh, cool.
See? So he says, "I'll have to go get them." He says, "They won't give them to me," so, "but I'll get them." So he went and got me a pump. Got a pump and the turbine, the motor, but we had no shaft.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had to go down that well with a shaft about 300 or so feet. I forget how this was. And this dog leg in the well presented with a problem. Here's your shaft. It's running there, and it didn't have bend tension there. And those days, they didn't have a bearing, water lubricated bearings like we got today. They were metal, and they had to be oiled and copper pipe to every bearing, and I'm going to say a bearing about every 20 feet on the shaft all the way down. And so that kept whipping out on account of the dog leg.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember now just how we did get enough money to get a shaft,
yeah,
so we could pump water. Well, we got water coming, and then we began to make some money, and we paid Portland back.
Eventually you did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And pay add the note that we signed, you know.
Oh, the $2,500?
Yeah, $2,500.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We paid that off first.
Before you paid Portland.
Yeah, before we paid Portland. Yeah, we saw that.
So that was Beaverton City Water System.
Yeah, that's right. And it was for years running.
For how long?
Well, then they put in a well out my way. I wasn't on the city council then.
Is that out by Farmington Road?
No, it's out there off of Davies Road, off of Hanson Road. And they put a well in there in a reservoir. And that was about 45, I'm just guessing now. Right after the war. So they had to have more water. This well here couldn't supply. And they put that in. And then they outgrew that. And then they went back and put a big pipeline in from Bull Run.
Mm-hmm. Beaver's never been on Wolf Creek, have they?
Mm-hmm.
Always been.
Wolf Creek, yeah, that's just new. That
was 45. Creek.
That's only about 10
new.
Or 15 years.
It is new. Was that 1932 that you were first on the city council?
Well, no, I was on before that.
You were?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember approximately when? Was it a couple years, 3 years?
Oh, I just go back just like that. When I was 32, I picked that up.
Yes,
during
right.
That dam up there. Yeah.
But that is where that water system got put in, was 1932.
Well, yes.
Mm-hmm.
33, I would say about 33, because the Crawford Dam, they were a couple of years there building the dam, and these Crawford Dams, and it might have been 34. I just, you know.
So right in there.
Well, I was building the dam.
Who were the other councilmen with you?
Oh, I've got pictures of them. There's none of them alive. I don't know if, Albert Rossi was known at that time.
Now, he owned the pharmacy, is that correct?
Hmm?
Did Rossi own the pharmacy?
Not at that time, no.
All right.
His dad had the saloon there.
Oh.
I don't remember if Al was on it at the time when we, drilled him or not, I doubt it. But anyway, a fellow by the name of John Curdy was on it, and Wilson, the jeweler. Of course, these all guys are all dead and gone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, I got a picture at home of them.
Okay. That's fine.
Yeah,
that's fine. We can let that go for now.
I tell you, little research on it.
Sure.
I know Wilson was one of them. John Kirby, myself, the three of us, five of us. And Harry Alexander.
Also.
Harry Alexander was one of them.
Well, for how many years did you serve on the city council?
Huh?
How many years did you serve on the city council?
Oh, all told, I think two or three whacks out of it, about 9 years.
About nine.
I'm just guessing. I don't know.
Did you serve in any other form of city government? Other than city council?
No. Well, I acted mayor a few times.
You were acting mayor?
Well, that's the oldest one. If the mayor couldn't, you know, he took over.
Uh-huh. Okay, I see. What about the fire department, police department?
Well, the fire department was volunteer. And had a volunteer fire department, and Speedy Clausen, he's dead now, with the fire at the studio. That was back in the 20s. And the Premium Cafe, that's what was on fire, and grabbed the old cart and everybody run, had a hose on it, and this, that, and the other. And Speedy fell down, and it was an old steel tire wheel, big wheels, and ran over his neck, and we thought he broke his neck. And they kept on going to the fire, and someone stayed with Speedy. And we found out that you couldn't kill him with a club, he'd come to the fire. And so, anyway, I had a Stutz Bearcat, I wish I had it in my collection, that I had taken in on a Model T Ford. In those days, those cars you had to eat, you couldn't sell them. And I had the thing sticking around. Went to right after Speedy got ran over, and said, "Guy, let us have that old Stutz, and we'll put a soda tank on it." And so I gave it to the fire department, and that was our first fire wagon.
You put what kind of tank on it?
Soda.
What's a soda tank?
Well, it's soda and water, and that'll put out a fire.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. And some type of pumping system?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, on this old Stutz.
Hmm.
Yeah. So we had to do all those things ourselves. We had no money because we didn't have money. So anyway, that was our first fire truck.
Stutz Bearcat, mm-hmm, with a soda tank on it.
Mm-hmm.
Where'd you get the tank?
I don't remember. Probably stole it.
Someone welded this on then?
Oh, well, we built it up.
Uh-huh. Built the bed up.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you mentioned the studio. Is that at the old airport on Erickson?
Erickson,
did you?
Mm-hmm.
What was
Premium.
This?
Premium. Howdy, you want to see me?
Yeah.
Just a minute.
Unusual those days. You see, the Model T Ford could get around in the roads we had.
But the Stutz Bearcat?
Mud roads and stuff, puddle jumpers, we called them. And I could have taken in a lot of old cars, and I did. I'll tell you about the history of another old car I took in later on. Where did I leave off at? You get
me? Oh, okay. I asked you about the studio at the
old. Yeah.
Now, what is the studio? There were films taken there. Is
yeah,
that
that's right. Made movies.
What was the name of the studio?
Premium.
Premium Studios?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Tell me about that.
Well, Madame Schunker, wanted to make a movie star of her son, Schumann Heinck. Gosh, you're taxing my my computer up here. She wanted to make a
Schumann Heinck.
Yeah, Schumannite. She was a singer, wasn't she?
Oh, yeah, an opera singer. A famous
German
opera.
And she had made a lot of money. And they formed this...
Is she a resident of Beaverton?
No, from Los Angeles.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And now why they picked Beaverton, I'm damn if I know, but anyway, they did. And so she brought her son up here, and he was handsome, you know, and no good. He was a drug addict.
This is what year?
Oh.
Here I go on years again.
Okay. I'm going to say about 1920.
And he was on drugs in 1920. Mm-hmm. So that's been going on for quite a while, huh?
Well, it's been going on as long as I've been born. I had a lot of people in the service community.
Oh, is that right? This is 1920 or in the 1920s, did you say?
Well, in the 20s.
Early, kind of?
Early 20s.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So she sent her son up here?
Yeah, she brought the son up here and she put her money in it. They built this, they formed a corporation, actually, and had stock, was so stocky. I didn't have any stock, I couldn't buy nothing. And so I don't know too much about the mechanics of it.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it didn't last too long. I'm going to say within a couple of years, it was down the drain.
Why did they pick the airport?
Well, the airport wasn't there. We didn't build the airport until after.
Ah.
After that, we used that for a hangar, a building.
Ah, it was abandoned.
Yeah. Oh, it went bankrupt.
Went bankrupt.
Yeah. And there's a Dr. Watts, an old abortionist, he bought it. He's the only one in town that had any money.
He bought it after it went bankrupt?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So did you lease it from him then for mm-hmm. to be a hangar? Dr. Watts was an abortionist.
Yeah.
Was he a Beaverton doctor?
No, Portland.
So Portland money came
out. But you shouldn't mention that name.
Watts.
Watts. Dr. Watts. You know, it's best, you know, what I said there, that's between you and I, because
all right.
Somebody's relatives can pick it up and, you know.
Oh, okay. Right. Agreed.
So anyway, we rented it from him. And that's where we put the airport in. Airport.
What was the name of the airport?
Beaverton Airport.
Beaverton Airport.
Place to land, that's all it was.
Could you tell me again how long it was over there on Erickson?
Oh, I recall, went to Charlie over there, early 30s.
So there 7 or 8 years, and then moved over to Cedar Hills Boulevard?
Mm-hmm. Charlie was farming that. He let us have a strip down through there.
And he owned all of that, is that correct?
Oh, he owned it. Farm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And his family still on it.
Mm-hmm. And is Charlie still around,
Bernard? No, he died here about 6 months ago.
That's what I thought.
I got a handle of that story I was going to tell you out there. They had they put it together. Some fellow that was interested in aviation picked it up, started. I don't know how it ever got started.
The studio?
Huh?
The studio?
No. This meeting that they had, the pictures out of this theater on 185th way out there, the night that I was telling about the United. Well, anyway, they had us out there, and there's only three of us walked in, some of them wheelchairs, and someone, what is it, 12 old pilots. And so anyway, it was an interesting meeting. And we had to laugh at in those days, everything, like movie, black and white, you know, and some of the craziest things you ever saw. We just couldn't, we forgot all about some of that stuff.
Who has those pictures?
Well, this guy dug it up, put the show on.
Who
the party on for us.
Who put the party on?
Well, I don't know now, he's from Medford or Grants Pass or something. And they furnished the theater. And then just families.
How many of you went then?
12 of us.
But I mean at this party.
Well, I guess we all had our wives.
Uh-huh.
And some of them had some, some of them didn't. You know, I don't know. They wasn't too many.
You don't know where he got those films?
No.
But they were taken over here.
Well, they took my pictures, my still pictures, and showed them. But the movies, God, I don't know. And those days, movies was unheard of, you know. And nobody had the camera, these pictures that I got, I didn't take them. If someone took them beside me, I couldn't afford a camera.
And gave them,
yeah.
Gave you
did
the...
Did you see that was over at the Aloha Theater?
No, Town Center,
185th. 185th, that news...
Town Center.
Yeah, Town Center or whatever, that's where they had it. And it was interesting. I was surprised. You know, I didn't know what to get into. They wanted to know if I'd come. Well, the guy interviewed me, and I showed. He took my pictures. See, I got must have about 10 or 15 pictures. And so that was the airplanes that were built.
Hmm. Fascinating. How about some county government?
Well, county government.
That's I'm what. Interested in you trying to get the county seat changed.
Well, the location?
Yes.
Not the county seat. There was about five on the capital improvements, and I don't know how I got it on there. Some of the county commissioners brought my name up, and I found myself on, and I accepted it.
Is this about in the 60s, Guy?
No, it's about, let's see, 60. But 66.
All right.
And they're going to have to remodel the old without living.
The courthouse?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want it there. And the special interest boys, how Hillsborough operates, you know, the special interest boys, they bought off the property all the way around the courthouse, knowing someday the expansion would have to come. And they'd get in on the kill. Well, I sensed that. And I didn't have any support. No, I was one man, a loser, and I fought them all the way through. I had when you go into Hillsborough, on the right-hand side, right across from what we call the Poor Farm, but it's an administration building now. The early days, we had what they call the Poor Farm. There was 30 acres in there, and I had 30 acres in there that I had a lease on an auction for $275,000. And I turned that over to the county commissioners, and they're still in Hillsborough.
Mm-hmm.
And bring it out there. And that would take care of this county forever on 30 or 31 acres.
It's still within the Hillsborough city limits?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
And as you pass it, as you go into Hillsborough, so on the right hand side, it's still the old barn, the old, everything's there. Well, this option cost me $3,500. And so I gambled 35, and I stupid. Now you're looking at the stupidest guy that you ever talked to. I should have had it. When the county turned it down, I should have kept it myself. Now I'm going to say that piece of property today is worth $5 million.
Must be.
I was 275. I had an option on to buy it because we had $275,000 in the budget to provide parking and location. But the boys that was outboarding me on it were special interest boys that had property and was on this committee right around me.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that.
You remember that?
Yeah.
And down here, I couldn't get any support from the people.
Beaverton, are you saying?
Yeah, this whole community.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't even know, the biggest share of them didn't even know there was a courthouse in Washington County.
Mm-hmm.
They came out and bought these homes, the payments was all, the taxes all wrapped up in them, and they could care less. And went to the polls, I could have won if the people got back in.
Mm-hmm.
But there it is. These five stories are supposed to be on there, and they only got four. They fooled around and messed it up. And didn't get the fifth and on. I could have got an injunction out and stopped from then, but I got tired of fighting it. I battled all by myself.
Yeah, it sounds like you were all alone.
I took $3,500 out of my pocket and gave it to the county, this little option, and handed it to them on the platter.
Mm-hmm.
And the county commission turned down because the county commissioners and the special interest boys were all in the same bed.
All together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, that brings us down. I'd like to know about your antique car collection.
Well,
I've heard about it.
There's not much about it. I mean, there's some of them. There's 12 of them. There's 25 of them all.
25 total.
Huh?
25 total?
Yeah.
What's the oldest one?
1902.
What, four?
No, hell no. There it is right there. That's a Miller tonight, isn't it?
What kind of car is that?
Cosmobile. 19-2, made in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Cambridge, Massachusetts. That's your oldest. What's your newest?
Latest. 56 Packard.
And then everything else is in between.
Mm-hmm.
What's your favorite?
I don't have any.
You love them all?
They're in love with me, and I'm more so than I am with them.
Where did you get this?
I got that over here at Cedar Mills.
I'm sorry, tell me again what it is.
Huh?
Tell me again what it is.
Crestmobile.
Mm-hmm. You got it in Cedar Mill? At mm-hmm. Starks?
Huh?
At Starks Garage?
No, Starks Garage. I sold him his first car and taught him how to drive.
Did you?
And then he ran over me. That's beside the point.
Is that Carl that you're referring to?
No, that's Byron.
Byron.
Byron. I sold him Model T Ford and taught him how to drive.
Well, who'd you purchase the Crestmobile?
Over there, from an old guy in Cedar Mills. Cedar Hills. I met Cedar Mill.
Cedar Mill.
And I restored it.
You don't remember his name, do you?
No, I don't. I really don't. He bought it second hand. It came to Portland. And he had a machine shop, an old German. He had a machine shop. Some dentist, the story now, I don't know. I got no way to prove this, what he told me. He kept the thing running for 5 or 6 years, and then he bought it off the dentist. And the dentist got more better automobile. And so he had it out here, and I heard about it.
When did you purchase it from him?
Oh, about 1950.
Ah. Well, it'd be natural for you to have antique cars, being in the car business all these years.
Well, I used to sell wagons. That's when my name was Wagon, huh?
Do you have antique wagons?
No.
Guy Wagon.
Guy Wagon.
Is that why you got into cars, because of your last name?
No.
No, I know.
No. I knew I had to make a living with my hands, and I never had anything but my ears, so I had to.
And car is spelled with two R's, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. I was all in Faces and Places just today.
I saw you.
Oh, did you see
yes,
that?
Yes, I did. Yeah. Was that quite an experience?
Yeah, well, they didn't show it like I thought they would. Not like I'd like to, but they didn't show one barn where these exotic cars, like those 16-cylinder Cadillacs, but they didn't show those at all. I drove one Packard out, 12-cylinder Packard.
How many Cadillacs do you have?
Three.
What years are they?
Well, 230s, 1930.
30. And the third one?
16 cylinders.
Wow. Oh. Where do you keep all your cars?
Out at the ranch.
You have them insured, I assume?
Well, that's what I was looking at when I came in.
Oh.
My insurance policy's out.
You gotta
dig up some money this morning. I haven't got it.
Well, from the sound of things, you've always been able to survive.
Well, yes.
You've not had money in the past.
I got my health, and when you got your health, you're the richest guy in town. Money don't mean that.
To what do you attribute your health?
Well, damn if I know. I'm just lucky. Now, Mildred, she's gone. She died of cancer.
Your first wife?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have children?
Oh, yeah. Two girls.
Two girls. Are they in Oregon?
No. One's in Livermore, California, and she had five kids. Before she found out what caused it, and the other passed too. Here.
So you have seven grandchildren?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Your other one is here?
Yeah, surely. Bob Carl's my general manager here.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't know why you're so healthy?
No.
And why
you're... I'll tell you why, I think, because I had a lady from down at Junction to write to me, and her name was Carr, and she's trying to put the tree together.
Mm-hmm.
And so I called her, and instead of write a letter, I can't write a letter, I can't spell anyway. And she said, by any chance, is there any Indian blood in here, your strain of the Carrs? I said, no, but there's a little colored blood.
Tell about you being related to Thomas Jefferson.
Oh, yeah. Well, Thomas Jefferson married a relative of the family, Dabney Carr. Yeah.
Dabney?
Dabney.
Thomas Jefferson married?
Sister. married Dad in the car. Oh. And then he'd buried, they buried at the Monticello,
Monticello,
whatever you call it. Mm-hmm. That's only just a short distance from my, where I was raised.
I see.
Yeah.
Is Carr English?
English or Irish? I never did know. I really didn't know.
So the Carr's been in America a long time.
Oh, I think they came across in the Mayflower.
They
settled in Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You've gone back home on occasion. You said you just went back, what, 6 months ago?
Oh, but no. It's been about 2 years.
About 2 years?
And they had a family reunion. That was a cousin of mine there that I grew up with. And he's the same age. And he's one day older. His birthday's on the 16th, mine's on the 15th. Mm-hmm.